Let's get into the message this morning. We're talking about Jonah, the last chapter, a great lesson. And that's what we're seeing today. But we've talked about chapter one, the great storm, where we have this prodigal prophet who is running from God and his call on his life. And then chapter two, we talked about a great fish. And we had the praying prophet that once he is thrown overboard, finds himself in the belly of a great fish and starts praying to God. And then chapter three, we talked about last week, a great revival. We have the preaching prophet and a very short message that he had, 8 words, but yet great results, 100%. A whole city repents and turns to God, from the greatest being the king down to the common person, turning their lives towards God. And then we're talking about chapter four today, a great lesson. We're talking about the pouting prophet, because the interesting thing about Jonah is not just about the message of Jonah, because we only have 8 words that he actually said, the message. Usually these prophets, the whole book is about the message of the prophet. This book is more about the messenger than the message. And that's what we find out in chapter four, that what God had Jonah going through was just as much to take the gospel, take his message to Nineveh, but it's also about what God was doing in Jonah. And so it's not just about the messenger or the message, it's about the messenger in this case. And I think all of us can identify with Jonah to some degree. We've all had times in our life where we've run from God. We've kind of turned away from what God was maybe asking us to do or calling us to do. And so we've all run like Jonah before. Jonah was a runner. In the first chapter, we see Jonah running away from God. And then we see in chapter two, he's running back to God. And then chapter three, we feel like he's really running with God as he takes this message to Nineveh. And then in chapter four, it's like he's running ahead of God. And so he's a runner. And there's a funny story that a Sunday school teacher asked her class, "Can someone tell me the lesson that we've learned from the book of Jonah?" And a little boy raised his hand and said, "I know what I've learned from the book of Jonah. Backsliders make whales sick." Not quite the message of Jonah. We'll make sure we get the message across today as we talk about a great lesson. This chapter four is very unique to the book of Jonah. As I said, most of the prophetic books, records that were written, had a lot of words that were spoken by the prophet, whereas this one only has 8 words spoken, or eight words of the message that he was to preach to Nineveh, spoken by the prophet. So it's more about the messenger than the message. And the book of Jonah has been building up to this point. This is the first time that we have a dialogue between God and Jonah. We've seen God talk to Jonah. We've seen Jonah talk to God. But now we have God and Jonah talking to each other. And so this is the great lesson. This is where it all kind of comes out about what has been going on, why Jonah has not wanted to go to Nineveh. Man, all the beans come out here, and so this is a great chapter. Let's start at the last verse of chapter 3, Jonah chapter 3, verse 10. It's where we kind of ended last week. When God saw what they did and how they turned from their evil ways, just make note, evil ways, he relented and did not bring on them the destruction he had threatened. So as you remember, God sent Jonah to Nineveh. He goes and he proclaims this message, and 40 days are going to be destroyed. They turn to him. They repent. The whole city does, from the greatest to the least. And so God relents. He does not destroy the city. And so this is what we're seeing here, that God saw what they did, how they turned from their evil ways, because they were a very violent and cruel group. And God relented and did not destroy them. Okay, so this is what we see happen. And then as we go into Jonah chapter 4, we would expect to find something like Jonah returned to his homeland, rejoicing over what the Lord had done. Or we would think that, man, when he arrived in Israel, you know, they came out to greet him and they grabbed big containers of Gatorade and poured it over him, just celebrating what God had done. Or we would think that maybe on the cover of Ministry Magazine, it said Prophet of the Year. I mean, a whole city had turned to God. But this is not what we see going into chapter four. After this great revival, probably one of the greatest revivals of all time, what we see in chapter four, verse one, is, "But Jonah, to Jonah, this seemed very wrong, and he became angry." This is a very interesting response. "But to Jonah, this seemed very wrong, and he became angry." Now, remember how we read that the people of Nineveh had turned from their evil ways. A literal reading of this first verse is that it was evil to Jonah with a great evil. That he considered what God had done by relenting from destruction and judgment, that God had done a great evil. This is the way Jonah took it. This is the way he sees it. He sees that God has done something evil, and Jonah is mad. This is one mad prophet. He is flaming hot mad that God didn't rain down judgment on them and destroy them. So Jonah is unhappy with God's behavior. And you know, when we read this, we're surprised and we're shocked. Revival came to Nineveh, and Jonah is upset. But Jonah considered the deliverance of Nineveh to be an evil thing, and so he is angry. The question becomes, why is Jonah angry? Well, we see that in verse 2. It comes out why he ran in the opposite direction, why he didn't want to go to Nineveh. In verse 2, it says, he prayed to the Lord. Now, this is the second time that we find Jonah praying to the Lord. The first time he prayed when he was thrown overboard and in the belly of a fish. Here's the second time we find him praying in this book. He says, he prayed to the Lord, isn't this what I said, Lord, when I was still at home? That this is what I tried to forestall by fleeing to Tarshish? I mean, he knew this was gonna happen. He goes, this is why I was running the other way. This is why I did not wanna go there. He said, I knew that you are gracious. Like, he talks about the character of God. He goes, I know that you are a gracious and compassionate God. You're slow to anger and abounding in love and a God who relents from sending calamity. This is the kind of God we serve. And Jonah was fine with that when it was directed towards him. But he wasn't fine with that when it was directed towards somebody else, especially his enemy, as in this case, the Assyrians, the people of Nineveh. And what's interesting, this word abounding in love really has this idea of your God who relents from sending calamity. Jonah didn't like it, and he was angry. He was mad at God. And like I said, Jonah loves this description of God, but when it's applied to him in Israel, but maybe not when it's applied to those around him. And I think maybe it's easy as we read this to be critical about Jonah and what he was thinking, what he was feeling. But we could make it real personal to ourselves today. How well would we do if we put ourselves in Jonah's position? I don't know, but maybe Jonah's grandfather, grandmother, maybe had been killed by the Assyrians. Maybe they had come in and skinned him alive, burned them at the stake. Maybe he had relatives that had been taken captive by the Assyrians and were put to death very brutally. Maybe they were tortured. And so you could see how Jonah would not like these people. That they had come in and taken Jews, had taken some of the Israelites and taken them into captivity, had killed them, had taken over some of their cities. This was an enemy. This was their enemy. I mean, how would we feel if we were in Jonah's shoes and somebody in our family member had been taken by them and killed? And here's the thing. God is still gracious and wanting to bring healing to the Assyrians and healing to the people of Nineveh. That's how big God's love is. Look at verse 3. He says, now, Lord, take away my life, for it is better for me that I die than to live. I mean, he's so mad at God. He's saying, it'd be better for me to die than to live right now. This is the same prophet who was running away from God, didn't want to have anything to do with God in chapter 1. In chapter 2, is rejoicing and thankful that God had saved him. And now he's wanting to die. Some think that what Jonah is saying here is kind of giving God a choice, like either kill me or kill them. But I don't want to live if you're going to let them live, is kind of what he was saying. Destroy them or destroy me. This is how mad he is with what God has done. And in verse 4, he says, but the Lord replied, is it right for you to be angry? Now, this is where God starts to talk with him. They start to have a conversation. It's the beginning of three questions that God asks him as he begins to probe his heart and hopefully get him to see where he's missing it, to expose his anger, to expose his wrong thinking. He says, but the Lord replied, is it right for you to be angry? It's funny that Jonah doesn't even respond to this. We have no response in here that he's responding to him. It just kind of, I think, walks away. And we see in verse 5, and Jonah had gone out and sat down at the place east of the city. So we have no response, but he just turns maybe and walks away. He doesn't want to have this conversation. He's just mad. But God is asking him, is it right for you to be angry with what I've done? And we see that Jonah had gone out and sat down at a place east of the city. Now, what's interesting about east of the city is that Jonah came into the city from the west. Now he's going out of the city to the east. So he's definitely not on his way back home. And maybe he doesn't want to go home because the people in his hometown probably are not going to like him for what has just happened to Nineveh, because they probably want to see Nineveh get destroyed too. So he goes out to the east. He's not heading home. East kind of is interesting. East can be, it's linked to disobedience with God. When Adam and Eve were kicked out of the Garden of Eden, God took them out to the east. So it is associated with disobedience. He goes out to the east, and like he's going out there to watch and see and to wait what is going to happen. Like, God, either kill them or kill me. I'm going to go out here. I'm going to watch and see what you're going to do. So Jonah had gone out and sat down at the place east of the city. There he made himself a shelter, and he sat in its shade, and he waited to see what would happen to the city. He's waiting. What is God going to do? Is he going to destroy it? Maybe he's praying and hoping that God's going to destroy it. But he's gone out of the city. He's built him a shelter because it's really hot, and he's waiting to see what is going to happen to Nineveh. And then in verse 6, then the Lord God provided a leafy plant and made it grow up over Jonah to give shade for his head and to ease his discomfort. So here he is out in the blazing sun, and the Lord provides. This is another place where we have the Lord provides. The Lord kept providing. He provided a fish, and now he's providing a leafy plant. And it grows up miraculously. God must have juiced this plant, and it grew up really quick, like athletes on steroids, and he got big in a hurry, and it's hanging over him and providing shade for him. Notice it was to ease his discomfort, to shade his head and ease his discomfort. Now, here's the interesting thing about this. Is that not only was God easing his comfort, meaning from the heat of the day, but this word discomfort is evil, trouble, or calamity, that he was giving shade for his head to ease his trouble, not just physically, but I think spiritually, emotionally, for what he was going through. God was like drawing him in, wanting to show his goodness to him and bring him in closer for this conversation that they're having. So he's given him shelter, shade for his head to ease his discomfort, not just physically, but also mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And we see that Jonah was very happy. This is the first time that he's been happy in this book, but he is very happy. He is ecstatic about this plant that has shot up overnight and provided him shade from the heat. So he is very, very happy. So God is helping him respond to what is going on in his heart and in his mind. Here's the thing. Notice that when God gave mercy to Nineveh, Jonah was angry. But when God gave mercy to him, he was happy. This is part of the message of Jonah. That isn't it true that sometimes, or all the time, we're happy when God shows us grace and mercy? But sometimes we're not too happy when he shows grace and mercy to somebody else. This is the great lesson that Jonah needed to learn. This is the great lesson that even the Jews, the nation of Israel, needed to learn. Jonah chapter 4, verse 70, so at the dawn of the next day, God provided a worm. Here we have again, provided. God provided a worm. So God keeps providing these things as Jonah goes through the story, which chewed the plant so that it withered. So it chewed the plant and withered. So this plant that was providing him shade for one day, a worm, God provides a worm, eats it up, and now it is gone. And now he's going to take on the full force of the heat of the day, and in a sense, take on the full force of maybe the judgment of God, the justice of God. Verse 8, when the sun rose, God provided a scorching east wind. Again, here we have God providing a scorching east wind. And the sun blazed on Jonah's head so that he grew faint. Man, he just wanted to collapse under this heat. I would say it's like go out in America's on its hottest day in the summer, put yourself on a black pavement or on a black roof, and you just how it gets harder. This is this hot wind that is just coming over him that he wants to faint. And talking to himself, now I don't think this is a prayer, but I think this is him talking to himself. He wanted to die and said, it would be better for me to die than to live. This is where he's at. The sun beating down on him. Jonah feeling not just the heat of this day, but maybe the justice and judgment of God. And he says, I just want to die. Jonah wants judgment from God for Nineveh so bad that he wanted to die. Now Jonah wants mercy from God for himself so bad now he wants to die. I mean, Jonah's just turning, flip-flopping back and forth. And in verse 9, but God said to Jonah, is it right for you to be angry about the plant? It is, he said. And I'm so angry, I wish I were dead. So God asked Jonah, is it right for you to be angry about this plant? I mean, God is pulling him in with these questions. Jonah is taking the bait and answering back. And Jonah basically confesses that it's more important for this plant to live than the Ninevites. That's what it's coming down to. It is more important that this plant lives than the Ninevites. He is upset. He is angry. He is mad that God has spared the Ninevites. He is upset. He is mad because this plant has died. It's more important for him to be comfortable than for the Ninevites to be saved, in a sense. These are Jonah's last words in this book. He says, it is, he said, and I am so angry, I wish I were dead. These are his last words in this book. In verse 10, but the Lord said, you have been concerned about this plant, though you did not tend it or make it grow. It sprang up overnight and it died. He says, Jonah, here's where you're at. You're concerned about a plant. You had nothing to do with this plant. You did not plant it. You did not water it. You did not make it grow. And yet you're concerned about this plant, and that seems to be all that you're concerned about. In verse 11, God goes on, he says, and should I not have concern for the great city of Nineveh? He goes, I'm concerned about this whole city of thousands of people. He says, should I not be concerned about them? You're concerned about a plant that you had nothing to do with. I'm concerned about these people that I love. He says, in which there are more than 120,000 people who cannot tell their right hand from their left, and also many animals. Now, we're not sure exactly what this means when it says 120,000 people who cannot tell their right hand from their left. Some scholars believe that these are children that don't understand left hand, right handed, you know, so that would just be 120,000 young people there, let alone adults who can tell the difference between their left hand and their right hand. And also, this is a Jewish idiom that could also mean people that don't know the difference between right and wrong. So it could be 120,000. Maybe that's the whole city is 120,000. And these people don't know the difference between their left and the right. They don't know the difference between right and wrong because they don't have God's law. Maybe that's what he's referring to. But nonetheless, God is making it very clear that, hey, should I not have concern for these people? But Jonah, you just have concern for this plant. A plant, something that you had nothing to do with, that you didn't plant it, you didn't water it, you didn't make it grow. And yet God is invested in these people. God loves these people. This is what he's concerned about. And really, this is a message for the Jews of Jonah's day. They had this idea that God loved them, but didn't love people outside of their nation, outside of their group. And so this message was really for the nation of Israel, for Jonah and his people, that they would come to recognize and realize that God didn't just love the Jews, but he loved the entire world. And his message was for the entire world. Just as God brought the word to Abraham that through his seed, the whole world would be blessed. The Jews weren't supposed to keep God's love to themselves. They were to spread it to the rest of the world. And through Jesus, it does go to the entire world. But the Jews had gotten into this mindset, it was just for us. God's love was just for us. Everybody else would get judgment, would get condemnation, would get justice, but we got God's grace. We got God's mercy. This is part of the lesson that Jonah needed to learn. This is part of the lesson that the children of Israel needed to learn, that God cared about their enemies just as much as he cared about them. Jonah cared more about a plant than the souls of Nineveh. He cared more about comfort than the destinies of these people that lived in this city. And I think the message to us is sometimes we act the same way. Sometimes we're just concerned about ourselves and our issues and what's going on in our lives. Are we concerned about the people around us? Are we concerned about our neighbor? Are we concerned about our coworker? Are we concerned about the people in Iraq? I know it's a big world and we can't care for everybody, but we can care for somebody. I think this is the part of the message that hits us from Jonah. Is are we doing our part to care for those outside our group? Are we concerned about the lady at work? Are we concerned about the neighbor who's lost? Are we concerned about the single mother down the street? Are we concerned about the people around us? Does our heart for our neighbors look more like Jonah's heart or Jesus's heart? I guess that might be the message for us, our takeaway. Is our heart more like Jonah's heart for those around us, or is it more like Jesus's heart? Where Jesus was willing to give his life for those that were far from God so that they could experience grace and mercy. Let's go to verse 11 again. This is the last verse of the book. And he says, should I not have concern for the great city of Nineveh, in which there are more than 120,000 people who cannot tell their right hand from their left, and also many animals? I think the idea that God cares about their entire life, how they made a living, all that they did, cared about all that they had, God cared about it. And this is the way it ends, with a question mark. This book ends with a question. It's one of only two books in the Bible that end with a question. And we get here to the end of Jonah, and it's like it doesn't end, but it stops. And we wonder, what happens next? What happened? And we don't know exactly. We don't know what Jonah did. We don't know what happened to Nineveh necessarily right after this. We don't know what God did moving through all this. We don't know. We suspect that Jonah wrote the book of Jonah. So maybe he did learn this lesson and he wrote it, although he never claims that he wrote it in the book. But if he did write it, maybe he's writing it because he finally did learn the great lesson and he wanted to pass it on to his brothers and sisters in his nation. But it ends with a question. And I think the reason he does that, if Jonah wrote it, is that the question lingers on for us. What is the lesson that God is speaking to us about through the book of Jonah? What do we need to examine about our own hearts and our own lives from what we've read in Jonah chapter 1, 2, 3, and 4? The author closes the book this way because the point of the book is not what Jonah did. The point of the book is, what will we do? That's why he ends with a question. What will we do as we're at Palm Sunday, heading into Resurrection Sunday? How are we letting God, how are we letting Jesus change our life and fill us with compassion for those around us? Do we have the heart of Jonah for those around us, or do we have the heart of Jesus for those around us? The point of the book is, what will we do? How will we, the hearers of this story, respond? It's very interesting. One of the things that Jews do on Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, is that they read the entire book of Jonah. And at the end, in unison, they all say, "We are Jonah." And they do this every year, once a year. "We are Jonah," because they know how they have a tendency to run from God. How we have a tendency to run from God. How we have a tendency to be more concerned about our plant rather than people. That we have a tendency to be more concerned about what's going on in our life and then instead of the people around us and what's going on in their life. So as we examine our hearts this morning, as we get ready to close, we are Jonah in a sense, and how will we respond to the message of Jonah?